The Broken Twig Podcast with your hosts, Nobes and Hirsty.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this newest episode of the Broken Twig Podcast with Nobes and Hirsty. And if you enjoy us, remember to follow us on Instagram at Broken Twig Podcast. Post a lot of great stuff there. And also, we just created a Twitter, so you should follow us there at The Broken Twig. We post a lot of stuff there, and I've been posting more stuff there recently than on Instagram. So it's a good follow, and it's good to keep in touch. And also, remember to rate us, even if it's 1 star or 5 stars, just remember to rate us. But if you are going to rate us low, say why, all right? Don't just say, you guys suck. Say, it's 1 star, because Hirsty sucks. Like, Nobes is amazing, but no one likes Hirsty. Right, Hirsty?
Thanks.
You're welcome. So anyways, how are you doing today?
Well, yesterday was a pretty sad day for a lot of fans around the hockey community, as Henrik Lundqvist was, the King was bought out by Rangers, which we all knew was coming, but
yeah, that's kind of,
anyone really wanted it to happen.
Yeah, it's not that good whenever someone's time with the team ends because of a buyout. You never really like to see it. And Lundqvist, he's the franchise goalie. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. So, I just wonder what his next steps are going to be.
Well, I'm sure he'll find a team. He's not terrible. He's still a decent goalie.
Probably yeah.
Price.
I feel like he'll probably want to sign with a team that has a chance to win the cup, because as everyone knows, he doesn't really have that. He doesn't have a cup yet, and that's really, he's right now is one of the best players to have never won a cup. He's basically done everything but win a cup, which is kind of bad. But then again, there's another school of thought where a lot of the times when you see that someone has, like, sometimes if a legend, they're drawn to a certain team, you know, like when you think of Henrik Lundqvist, you think of New York, and sometimes if they just go to another team, kind of ruins their legacy, you know, it's like sort of like Martin Brodeur going to St. Louis, you know?
Well, it won't ruin his legacy, like...
Well, like, sort of like, I don't know.
Brodeur like, is not as good because he went to the Blues.
No, but not...
I understand what you're saying, where when you go to another team and then you suck there, and it's like, oh, well, then you see him, part of him from that point of view because it's more recent.
Yeah, exactly. Or it just kind of feels like when you kind of just want a player to retire with a team, even if they've been there for their entire career, instead of just going to another team for 1 year and maybe not being so good or something. And, yeah. And a lot of players have done it. Like, obviously, sometimes it does work out. So, I'm like, Ray Bourque going to the Avalanche for that one last year. That's one of the main things when you think of Ray Bourque. You think of his great career with the Bruins and all the great stuff he's done, being on the top defenseman in NHL history. You also think of that last run with the Avalanche where he just won the cup, and it's just his final game and him receiving it. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I really hope, I think most fans would agree with me on this, that I really hope that Lundqvist can find somewhere to possibly win a cup, have some fun for like a last ride, and then retire happy. Maybe go Rangers sign him for a 1 day contract so he can just retire a Ranger.
Yeah. You know? Because it's kind of tough, because on one hand, I think it would be cool if he retires a Ranger, you know, like just he's the Rangers player when you think he's a Ranger. But then on the other hand, you kind of want him to go on one last run for the cup with the Avalanche or the Hurricanes or a team like that. So just kind of tough, you know?
Yeah, maybe even a team like Vegas, because reports that they could be trading Marc-Andre Fleury, especially after the signing this morning, yesterday for you guys, but Leonard was signed to a 5-year, $5 million deal.
Yeah. Well, we actually got pretty lucky today because a whole bunch of news happened right before we recorded our podcast, but we'll talk about a bit more of it later. We're lucky And then right after the podcast ends, the Leafs are going to trade Mitch Marner and William Nylander for Victor Hedman or something like that.
No, right after the podcast, there's going to be an OEL trade to, what's it called? Canucks.
Yeah.
Oh, gonna be that trade. And then the Leafs are going to trade Johnsson somewhere, and the Oilers are going to trade for a Kemper with their
pick. Yeah, and the Sabres are going to trade Jack Eichel with the Rangers for the first overall pick, and then plus another second-round pick.
There's a lot of potential trades coming up.
Yeah.
First of all, two signings today that make way for a trade were the Leonard signing and also the Tristan Jarry signing, which is 3 years at 3.5 mil, I think.
Yeah, 3 years at 3.5 million. So, because it really answers the question, because there was a big debate about whether the Penguins would stick with Jarry or go Murray, and I personally thought that they would keep Jarry, and I was right, because I was right, because Jarry would be cheaper, and also the Penguins have shown that they're willing to go with a goalie that has had more recent success over a goalie that maybe is more, what's the word, more known with the franchise, that's what let's go with, but hasn't really been as good recently.
Yeah, well, I think since there was a certain point in which everyone was like, well, we know now that they're probably going to trade Murray and keep Jarry, especially with all the rumors of a Murray trade going around and Rutherford making all these stupid deals.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they – I definitely see them moving Murray and possibly the Smith too, as there was a rumor connected that they might have wanted to bring back Marc-Andre Fleury and Stan Bowman it, where you just bring back every player that was on your team.
When I saw that comment. I saw that one.
Yeah, this is what what's it called? Stan Bowman did, where he brought the band back together, trading everything away just so he can, like, Artemi Panarin for Brandon Saad. He just got Brandon Peary back for Dylan Sakura.
Well, but you're saying, though, but about getting another goalie, I don't think that Casey DeSmith is a bad goalie, and I really don't.
Not at all.
And I feel like one of the reasons why they had to trade one is because they also had DeSmith, so they basically had three NHL goalies. And I think that if they're just going to get another goalie, it kind of doesn't really make sense.
Also, the expansion draft, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, but I don't think, well, now that they're assuming that they will trade either Jarry or Murray, I don't think that'll make sense for Seattle to take the Smith when there will most likely be a lot of other good goalies available, especially because I feel like a lot of teams will take the route that and have like a 1A and a 1B and try and get a really good tandem.
Yeah, I agree. Well, there will be a lot of choices in the expansion draft. But, yeah, I don't know. But they could still trade DeSmith just because if they want Fleury back. I mean, DeSmith is a solid backup.
Or they could just bury him in the AHL like they did this year. They really have some options. But I feel like if I'm them, I would probably want to keep DeSmith and then trade Murray, see what value can get. Maybe trade, like, Murray and Crosby for a 7th-round pick, and then also sign Cody Ceci, because it seems like Jim Rutherford really likes defensemen that aren't that good.
Yeah, he likes defensemen signed to crappy contracts or signing them to a crappy contract that aren't good at all. Some things that come to mind, Jack Johnson.
Mike Matheson.
I was about to say trading for Mike Matheson. They had good Branson before, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, oh look, they have some more. They also have like Brian Dumoulin too. So yeah,
they love getting. Mm-hmm. Maybe they bring back Ron Hainsey.
Yeah, maybe Ron Hainsey back to the Penguins. It's a done deal.
Noted, really good player, Ron Hainsey, by the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that
he does have two cops.
Pardon?
I said he does have two cops.
Oh, yeah, two cops. Very impressive. So does Murray, by the way, I think.
Yeah, Murray does have two cops. So.
And something notable from each team that Fleury's been on with the cup run, they've gone with the other goalie.
Well,
and I don't know how much.
When they had the original one, 2009, Fleury was the starter. But other than that, you're right. He has been the backup.
When it's been a choice to pick one of the two, every time, both times, the team has gone with the other goalie. And yes, they won the cup one year and the other, it was Robin Leonard. But still, it kind of says something about Fleury that maybe the stabby in the back is how he actually acts sometimes around the GMs. And that's, they don't like.
Hey, don't go disrespecting my boy Fleury like that.
But okay, maybe I'm reaching, but I don't
but
know.
You're right. Because the Vegas Golden Knights, right after re-signing, keep losing my train of thought. Right after re-signing Leonard, they tweeted a bunch of panda emojis, which it's because Leonard's nickname is Panda. So they, yeah. And then everyone in the comments was like, oh, you're backstabbing Fleury. Like, Fleury's used to being backstabbed. Like, no, they're allowed to do it. And how is re-signing your number one goalie like backstabbing yourself? Hey, yeah. So I just don't really.
I was going through the comments of that, and there's a lot of comments where people are just spamming flowers.
Yeah, I know.
And saying that Leonard isn't good and he's better than
Leonard. What do you mean Leonard's not good? He was literally a Vezina finalist. Okay, let's see what they said. So unspammed a bunch of flower emojis. When Fleury is released, it's the last part. Vegas is no longer something special. They're just another hockey team. Happy for Leonard, but what a backstabbing organization already. Good luck attracting players when you screw them over. Any team is lucky to have Fleury, but he is why I cheered for Vegas. Now I'm done. Canucks, and that's it for me now. How quickly flowers pushed away.
Okay. Before we keep talking, someone explained to me how you're lucky to have a goalie. Marc-Andre Fleury, yes, everyone thinks of him. He's a great guy, all that stuff. But I want to know how they're so lucky to have him. It's not like he was amazing this year.
Yeah, it's the NHL player. You're trying to win a cup. You don't start who you like better. You start who will win you games. That's why I started Leonard, not over Fleury. And I'm sure if Fleury had started over Leonard, everyone would be complaining, why did they start Fleury over Leonard? They should have started the better goalie, blah, blah, blah. So it's a no-win situation. And they realize, you know what? I'm starting who I think is better. And in my opinion, after this first few games, Fleury should not have played at all in the playoffs.
You're lucky. Sorry. You're lucky to have someone who posted a 277 goals against and a 905 save percentage. Doesn't sound very lucky to me. So it must be his glittering, shining personality. Oh! He just posted a sword in his back with DeBoer's name on it. So what the hell does he offer to the table?
Well,
Leonard was much better this year. Leonard played 36 games, and Fleury played 49. In 49, Fleury had won 27, 16, and 5, 277 goals against, 905 save percentage. Leonard, I don't want to pull it together, but in 33 games with Chicago, 16, 10, and 5, 301 goals against, 918 save percentage. Keep in mind, Chicago is much worse than Vegas. And then on Vegas, 3-0. 167 goals against, 940 save percentage with a shutout. And that was in the three regular season games he played with them. And I don't understand. Not Vegas. Leonard is much better than Fleury right now. And yes, Fleury is a great guy apparently, but I wouldn't say they're that crazy lucky to have them that they can't, you know, move on from him. You treat the people – you should treat them well because they've given, I don't know, they've given 2 years to your organization. Good job. But after all, it's a business, and you do what's best for your team. And what's best for their team is keeping Robin Leonard and trading Fleury.
Yeah, you do what's best for your team. And I don't think, and if you think that the Golden Knights, a team that's up against the cap, can afford to pay someone who's not even going to be their starter $7 million, then you are severely misguided. I don't see how anyone could watch the playoffs and see how the Vegas Golden Knights will not trade Fleury. And I don't get how people can be mad with the signing. If you have one of the top goalies in the league, because in my opinion, Leonard is a top 10 goalie in the league, and you have the opportunity to sign them, then you should. And it's also we're pretty cheap because the AAV, it's only just over $5 million, which isn't really that much. And it still leaves a lot of cap space to be devoted to the rest of your team.
Yeah, keep in mind, that is a very good signing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lot of money, especially for a goalie of Leonard's caliber. That's like Anderson's deal. And Anderson signed it before he played really well.
Yeah, it's exactly $5 million for five more years. So it's pretty much exactly like Anderson's deal. So you're basically paying your goalie $5 million. And I'm assuming that they're going to trade Fleury. But I really assume that if they do trade Fleury, they'll have to retain some of his salary because no one's going to take on that $7 million. So they'll probably have to retain around $3 million. And Vegas is already up against the cap because right now, even though right now their projected cap hit is it's $81.5 million, and they still have to re-sign. They don't have anyone major still, but they still have some small players like Nick Cousins, Chandler Stevenson, John Merrill, Derek Englund, who is the assistant captain. So they still have some moves that they do need to make, and they'll probably still want to make some more trades signings because they have been rumored to be interested in Pietrangelo. So they'll have to make something move.
Well, what I'd like to say is I'd like to read some more of these comments before we move on to the next topic. This is from Pens Fan. How quickly Flowers pushed away. Apparently, Penguins aren't the only one to mistreat Fleury. Guy deserves better treatment. He is the best and deserves to be appreciated as a number one goaltender. Then the comment below is, the Pens didn't mistreat Flower. They let him go because it was most suitable decision considering the circumstances. And I completely agree. How did they turn their back on him?
What do you mean? This guy, he is the best and deserves to be appreciated as number one goaltender. I don't deny it. But the thing is, he isn't the number one goaltender on Vegas, so he shouldn't be treated like it. You know, you want to be treated like the number one goaltender, play like it, all right? And if you can't do it, then go to another team and hope you can rebound his career like he did in Vegas. Because let's be honest, before he went to Vegas, he was falling off a bit and he wasn't really being as good. But then going to Vegas kind of saved his career.
Yeah, he wasn't the number one goaltender on Penguins either. And I don't think they really had a choice in keeping him. The team picked him. They could have protected him, but they went with a younger goalie who had won them two cups before he was a rookie, might I add.
Yeah.
And the other team picked him, and then it's not backstabbing. They're not like mistreating him. I think one of the reasons Fleury is going to be traded, not just because the cap thing, is because what his agent posted, and his agent did not post that by himself, and everyone knows this, that what he posted, like, that's got a portion in it. You don't I don't understand, because people, you can like him, but it's you go with the better goalie.
Yeah.
The cap, do what's best for your team. And now they can afford to.
Yeah. Leonard is the better goalie, and he's making $2 million less. And now he's making $2 million less than Fleury. So I don't really see what the decision is. I don't really see what Vegas' fans are, or what the people in the comments are thinking.
Yeah. Number one team, and they can't even make it to the finals behind the guy, and he gets $5 million a year. Do you know why they didn't make it to the finals? Because they had 45 goals in their first 12 games of the playoffs, and their last eight, they had 12. That's why.
Yeah.
It wasn't even Fleury's fault. They lost the game on the first shot of the game. It was 1-0. Fleury was fine in that game, but you got to.
The problem wasn't the goaltending. I'm just saying the problem wasn't the goaltending, but the thing, you know what? I thought that it could have been, but and that's the thing though. Leonard's the better goalie, and he's cheaper, so it's better to keep him. And the problem, like you're saying, the problem is goal scoring. So that means that they probably don't want to commit $7 million to a goalie that may not even be their starter, and they'd rather spend that money somewhere else, such as acquiring a player like Pietrangelo, or trading for someone, or signing a forward like Evgeny Dadonov or Mike Hoffman in free agency.
Yeah. Well, you know, off the heels, another recent thing, Michael Grabner was just bought out this morning, like 30 minutes ago. And that could have a meaning to – that could be related to an Oliver Ekman-Larsson trade, as apparently yesterday night or afternoon, apparently Vancouver was said to have offered a trade to Arizona, and it was just waiting on being accepted. Now, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Arizona's kind of in a shitty situation because of him. He said he only is going to two teams. He has two teams on his list, which is unfortunate for them because that means they're probably going to get lesser return for him.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. With the I don't know if I said on the podcast or just to you outside, the no move clauses, no trade clauses, they're not about, like, not moving. If someone finds out that a team doesn't want them, they're not going to be like, no, I'm going to stay around, just stick around just to be annoying. The reason why is that they can choose where they want to go. And if a team, and if, for example, if the team wants to trade them to Edmonton, they can say, I don't want to go to Edmonton, and then they just decline it, and then the team has to trade them to another city where they may want to go. So that is the purpose of it. And also, well, for the Ekman-Larsson stuff, though, I really feel like Ekman-Larsson, he used to be underrated, but he's becoming more and more overrated. He really isn't that. I really don't think that he's a number one defenseman, and he has his contract is way too expensive. So the only reason why a team would be getting them is for him to be their number two defenseman. Well, and also another thing that I do want to say too, that I don't think that the Canucks are in any position cap wise to get them. I feel like it's just gonna be.
You know why? Because the trade is gonna be something. They're clearing cap, right?
And you know, some people have.
We all knew it's probably going to be like Besser and one of their worst contract for like Ekman-Larsson and like a second or third rounder or something.
Well, some people have been saying Louis Erickson and
Sutter, that is, I've heard.
Yeah, that is a pretty bad contract. And the thing with Louis Erickson's contract is, though, even though that his cap hit is $6 million, his salary is only $4 million. Which I think will make a big play in the trades and stuff, because Arizona, as we all know, they are looking to save some money because they are running out of it. So I think that is something that we can look at. And then some other people of their bad contracts that they could trade, like Sven Bierti, even though his actual cap hit is 3.36, his salary is only 2.5, which would make the deal be more easy to go through.
I find it funny you say only, because for 13 points a year, you shouldn't be paying him $1 million. Like Jason Spezza was.
Well, I mean, like, because the difference between it.
He was on pace to get 40 points this year, and he is being paid $700K to play on the fourth line, and he was on pace to get around 40 points. Louis Erickson was on pace to get 23.25 or something points. And he's getting $4 million. Well, he's getting $6 million, but it's $4 million against the cap. Like,
just well, I mean, only compared to their other ones.
When does OEL's contract expire?
It's long term. I'll see.
I think it's got three more years, three or four more years.
Oh no, his contract is long term. His contract is until the. It runs through the 2026-27 season.
Oh my. That sounds like a deal.
That's
for
the one, two,
Rutherford.
Because yeah. They just signed it recently. This season, the current season, 2019-20 season, that was the first year of the contract. So he's going to be – so that's one, two, three, four, five, six. That's 7 more years. So this contract, they're going to be paying him until he's 36 years old. And he's already started declining when he's only 29. So I feel like this contract will be really bad by the time it expires and most likely bought out.
That seems like something Benning and Rutherford both love. They love terrible contracts for declining players. So maybe one of them can jump.
Arizona has a bunch of bad contracts because they're also paying Clayton Keller a whole bunch of – they're paying Clayton Keller $7.1 million for 45 points.
That's not a bad contract. He just had an off year. And also, Kessel, like, is
– No, I'd say that Clayton Keller has definitely not lived up to expectations. Yesterday, when I was – like, when the news about the Ekman-Larsson contract came out, I was looking at Keller's stats, and he really – especially if you look at his stats before he was drafted, because he was drafted in 2016. And then he went to Shawtuck St. Mary's, which is – where a lot of good players have come out of. Sidney Crosby went there. It's just a really good hockey school. And he was with the United States Development Program. He had 107 points in 62 games in his draft year. And like I was saying with the Shawtuck St. Mary's, he had 129 points in 1 year, 77 the next. So he really, he was known for putting up big points and getting goals, and that's really what they drafted him for. But so far in the NHL, his career high in points has been 65, and every other year he had 40. He had that in his rookie year, and then he had 47 and 44.
Okay, I'm sorry, but you can't be expected to get a crazy amount of points when you're playing with Christian Dvorak.
Well,
he's playing with shits. He's on the Coyotes playing with. The four centers on the Coyotes are Dvorak, Hayton, Richardson, and Derek Stepan. Those guys are all third, fourth line centers right now.
So that doesn't matter. He's their best. When someone is your best player and you're trying to build your team around them, they should be able to put up points no matter who they're playing with. They should be able to get at least 60 points no matter who they're playing with. Because you're basically saying that they are good enough to build your team around. Because Clayton Keller, he's supposed to be the main piece of their core. He's supposed to be the player that they should build their team around. So if he can't put up points, that basically means that you chose the wrong person to build your team around.
I think you need to be patient. I think he's fine. He had an off year this year.
Off 2 years.
I think he would have done better than he did last year. I think he would have got like 55 points. Keep in mind,
he just had his sophomore slump has just been extended by another year, is what you're saying, basically.
I don't think it's a sophomore slump, but
well, yeah, because that's what people were saying after his second year, because his point total compared to his rookie year to his sophomore year was 64 and 47, and his goal total was 23 compared to 14. And his plus minus was a minus 7 in the first one compared to a minus 21 in the second one. And although I really shouldn't be saying that because I really don't support the use of plus minuses. So I know why I said I really only think that plus minus, it's really only six. Like, it's only, I'm actually, I don't know. I'm just off today just with talking. I don't know why. But it can be used to show some things. Like, for example, I don't really think plus minus is a good stat. But when Leon Draisaitl has over 100 points and is still a minus, that really shows something. When the Detroit Red Wings are a minus 120, it shows something, you know? So, like, sometimes it can show something, but only in the extreme cases. But if someone is, like, a minus 7 or something and they have, like, 65 points, I really don't think it shows something. But if they're a minus 46 on a team that's not that bad, then it shows something.
Yeah. Well, Michael Grabner, you know, he played on the Leafs for one season. I remember that.
He did.
He was not terrible, but he's really fast and he can penalty kill. So maybe the Leafs should go after him for $700K or whatever. whatever they have to pay him. It's probably not a lot. He would be on their fourth line and play the penalty kill.
Yeah, he is really good at penalty killing. So maybe they could. I was thinking that they could get Grabner. That's what I was saying to you. Because he probably wouldn't play that much. And also, a good thing is that normally when a player is has just been bought up, you can get them for pretty cheap because they're already making a bunch from their former team. So you can use this as a negotiating tactic. Be like, oh, well, you were only getting paid $2 million from your previous team because of the buyout. So that means that we should be able to get you for cheaper. And that the buyout market has been something that teams have been capitalizing off of recently. And it's really worked out because the Tampa Bay Lightning, they got some players on their team were bought out before, like Kevin Shattenkirk and Zach Bogosian. So, and the Dallas Stars, they got Corey Perry and Andre Seffer. And I feel like this is that like Grabner would be someone that the Leafs should get.
Well, I think now's a good time to move over to our draft rankings. As everyone knows,
the title spot of our show, what we were talking about. This is what you guys were all waiting for. This is what you clicked on the show for. So let's get into it, and we can rotate. We'll rotate. How it's going to work is we're going to rotate picks. Like, for example, I'll say my first overall pick, then Hirsty will say his, then Hirsty can say his second, then I'll say mine, sort of like that, you know? And then after we say it, we'll explain a bit, say why we thought
before
the person.
We say this, we're doing it based off of team fit. We're not doing it based on best player overall.
Yeah, this isn't a prospect rankings. It's a mock draft. So it's based off a few different things. It is based off how good the prospect is, but it's also team fit, position, links to the team. For example, if a team has been shown to be interested in a player, we will be more likely to have them take it. And yeah, so it's not just a prospect ranking, but it's also not totally just like, oh, this player will fit perfectly on this team. We should get him here. And we do factor in skill and how good a prospect is too.
Yeah. So.
And also me and Hirsty.
Before we start, actually you go first.
Well, I think that me and Hirsty before, we should also say sort of like our methodology with picking it. So like if we rather potential, rather certain things over others, we should say it first just so that, just, you know? So,
yeah.
Hirsty, do you want to start?
Well, you can go first. We probably have
them. Personally, with mine, when I was doing these draft rankings, I tried to factor in potential over how good they are now, because I feel like when you're drafting, you're not drafting for how good a player is going to be 1 or 2 years from now. You're going to be drafting over how good they are going to be 5 years from now, and that's what you should be looking at. And just because a player is better off the bat doesn't mean that they're going to be better overall. Because there are a lot of people a lot of prospects that haven't really done so well off the bat, but still have had long and successful careers. Then there's other prospects that have done really good off the bat, like Clayton Keller, as we were just talking about, but haven't really done so well over long.
Andrew Raycroft is a good example.
That's a bit of an extreme, but yeah. And also in my thing, I also try and see, like, what was it? I don't know why. I just can't speak today. I just don't really know. Okay, well, and also there's some qualities for a player. Like, for example, I really don't think height factors into something much. And it really only depends on how a player plays. Like, sometimes if a player plays a certain way, it's better if they're big. But then also, there's a lot of shorter players in the NHL that are just as effective as doing what big players are normally do as them. And I really think it's not about your actual height, but it's about what your height is. I just shouldn't be speaking today. I don't know why we're doing a podcast today, because I can't speak. The whole purpose of a podcast is to speak.
Let me go into it. So I'm also kind of similar to you. I'm mostly basing it off potential rather than best now. It's about potential for me, how they're going to be. It's about the team fit, what each team needs. But that's not the most important thing. It's basically, like, you're not going to see, let's say there's 30 straight centers and the Wilds need a right winger and they're picking ninth overall. So they're going to pick the 54th overall ranked prospect because he's a right winger. It's not like that. It's just, it's similar. It's going to be similar to other ones you see, but yeah, it's got this team fit involved just because a team with four centers already isn't going to pick a center.
Yeah.
So you want to
start? Well, we'll explain our picks, but yeah, I guess
you can start off with first overall. I think we both have the same
player. First overall, I have, you already know, Alex Laferriere.
Laferriere.
Alex Laferriere, the player that people are going to be accidentally picking in fantasy pools for years to come. No, I'm just kidding. I have, you already know, Alexis Lafreniere. He's a left winger. He's from Rimouski Oceanic, and he is really good. He was named best player in the CHL 2 years in a row. He could have played in the NHL last year, but because of his age, he had to play in the QMJHL again. And he is so good that for most of these players, when I'm listing off the, and saying why I thought that they should go in certain positions, I listed comparables in the NHL. But Lafreniere is so good that there's no comparables in the NHL, but players are compared to him. You don't say that Lafreniere is like a Jonathan Huberdeau type player. You say that another player is a Alexis Lafreniere type player, and that's how good he is. And I really don't think that anyone is going to be getting too mad over me having him number one.
Yeah, well, I have Lafreniere at number one, and he's clear-cut the best prospect available, and you basically said it all. There's not much to say. It's Alexis Lafreniere. We all know about his success in the World Juniors. He won Player of the Tournament for Canada. So is there really much to say about him other than that?
Yeah. Okay, well, Hersey, now you can say your number two pick.
Well, for me, it's Tim Stützle, the German born player, and the reason why is mainly because he's a winger, and him and Byfield, I think they're on very similar levels, and because they're so similar and LA needs a left winger, that's why I took Stützle. Stützle is a very good, as you saw in most people probably saw him in the World Juniors, he was very dominant for the German team. Last year, he put up 34 points in 41 games for Adler Mannheim of the Dell. And you may say, oh, that's not a lot. Like, he's not as good because he didn't put up as much points. You look at Byfield, probably put up way more points. Yeah, but it's because he's playing against much tougher competition. He's playing against people that are much older than him. He's only 18 years old. And he's playing against like 22, 23-year-olds. So it's a much tougher competition, and I think he'll be very good on that LA Kings team that's already stacked with prospects in a few years.
Well, for my number two pick, I actually had Quinton Byfield, who, even though you were putting up the position stuff, I feel like this early in the draft, you shouldn't be drafting for position. You should just be taking best player available. I feel like even though you did bring up that Stützle has played wing at parts this season in the Dell, I feel like in the NHL, he'll most likely draw in as a center anyways, because that's his natural position. That's what he's good at. And I find unlikely that teams will try and change it unless he starts to struggle at center. And Byfield, he's just really good. At one point before this season, people actually said that he might overtake Lafreniere as the number one prospect. And I say that he is the most potential of anyone this draft, besides maybe Lafreniere. But Byfield has potential to be one of the best players in the NHL. He's been compared to the likes of Anze Kopitar and Evgeny Malkin. And I feel like that's just really good. And he has been compared to Anze Kopitar. So why shouldn't he go to and play with Anze Kopitar in LA?
All right. Well, on to your third player. We got.
Well, for third player, I think you already know this. I have Tim Stützle going to the Ottawa Senators, and you already talked about him, but I think that even though I did put Byfield ahead of him, I still think that Stützle is going to be really good. And I think that out of the two, Stützle is more likely to succeed in the NHL right away because He's already played against men before. He already knows what to do. And he's the more NHL-ready prospect. And Stützle, his draft stock has really risen throughout the season. Because before the season started, I doubt most people would have him top 15. And as the season went on, he kept rising and rising, which is really something that you like to see from a prospect because it shows that he is improving. And it means he'll continue to keep improving. And really, I think that this could be a really good pick. And who knows, maybe in a few years I'll be saying, why did I ever put Byfield ahead of Stützle? Stützle was way better. And Stützle, he is one of the top skaters in this draft too. So, yeah. Hirsty, do you want to say your number three pick now?
Number three, you already talked about him before, Quinton Byfield. Now, I have a bit of a different comparable. I have Evgeny Malkin. Well, I think because he's a big guy, 6'4", 215. He's big. He's got great, very good hands. And he's got a good hockey IQ, quite similar to Malkin. Now, he's got that. He's got the potential. And I think he's got a very high ceiling. But the reason I put Stützle ahead of him is, like I said before, a bit of the need. And, you know, I kind of agree with you you don't pick for position. You pick best player overall, but I still think Tim Stützle is there, like at least on the same level, could be better than him. Because, since I think that's why I have Byfield at number three, and I still think he's going to be an amazing player in the NHL, and I would love to see a Byfield, Brady Tkachuk, Batherson line in the future. That would be
a very good line. Well, that's what I was also going to bring up with some of my later picks, but yeah, Hirsty now. You can say your number four pick.
Number four, I have Cole Perfetti. So with Cole, you go into the Red Wings. So with the Red Wings, you know, they Red Wings fans probably are very pissed off that they flipped to four, you know. But Cole Perfetti is a very good player. He is – most people ranked him a bit lower. I've seen a lot of rankings 7, 8, 6, around there. But I don't know. I really like Cole Perfetti as a player. He put up 111 points in 61 games with Saginaw in the OHL this year. I know plus minus, not that important, but he was plus 49, which is very good. And he doesn't take a lot of penalties. He's a very disciplined player. And I think someone to compare him to, I'd compare him like a better version of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins because he's very good puck handler, puck skills. He's a very good playmaker. He's got the execution on point. Like, not a very good – he's, you know, a playmaker. And he still can score goals. Like, he's not – he's got a lot of different offensive weapons that he could do. He's got a very good hockey IQ, and he's someone that can – you know, slow down the game and make a big play. And whenever he's on the ice, he's a big threat. And he's not only is he a good, very good playmaker, but he's a dangerous scorer too. So you should always be aware he's going to be a very good player in the NHL.
For number four, I also have Colt Perfetti going to the Red Wings. I think that this one, for me, I see it as a bit of a lazy pick for me. And in my draft, first drafts and stuff, I did have a few more lazy picks, but I eventually switched around stuff. But I feel like this is just a lazy pick because there has been a lot of rumors that Detroit is interested in. But I really feel like he is still a really good player. And his hockey IQ and hockey sense is that to rival Mitch Marner, which is something that's amazing. He put up really good numbers, and he put up a really good showing at the World Under 18 Summer Showcase. And although he didn't make Team Canada for the World Juniors, it's really hard to make that team. So it's not really something that you should look at too much. And he'll definitely make it next year if he is not already in the NHL. Because he's just a really good player, really good everything. And he is a center. And Detroit will need someone to play behind Dylan Larkin. And Cole Perfetti could be the perfect candidate to do so.
All right, who's your next guy?
Well, next, going to Ottawa, I have Lucas Raymond. For the Ottawa pick, this took me a while because there's a bunch of players that I saw Ottawa could take, and it took me a while to figure out. But eventually, I decided to settle on Lucas Raymond Frölunda of the SHL. He can play both wings, and his main player comparable is Mitch Marner, and he's the classic example of someone that will have a lot of potential in the long run. But I don't feel like Lucas Raymond will go into the NHL right away, but he probably could get there in a few years, and because he played a bunch of games in the SHL this year, but he didn't really get that much playing time, which isn't something that you should look into too much, because it's really hard for an 18-year-old to get much playing time in that league, and even playing the amount of games that he did in that league is a great accomplishment. And I feel like next year he'll probably spend another year in Sweden getting better, sharpening his talents. Then after that, he should be ready to go in the NHL. And I feel like he's a really good pick with the Sens. And like you were saying before, just imagine a line in the future of Brady Tkachuk, Tim Stützle, and Lucas Raymond. That line would absolutely dominate. I don't know how anyone would be able to stop it. So that's why I have Ottawa picking Lucas Raymond at number 5.
Well, I have the exact same pick as you. I also have Lucas Raymond. And I agree with most of the points he said. He's a very skilled player. He's got great hockey sense, great hands, and he's a very great skater, very fast. And he's kind of more, you know, aggressive. Like he's got a lot of intensity. He works hard in the battles. Probably better than Marner. Marner doesn't do that much. And he's got very good forechecking and very good at takeaways, which Marner also is very good at. And I agree with you. Marner is a good suitable comparison to Raymond, because Raymond, he's a very skilled player. He's more of the guys like not, you know, you kind of think of the guys as not like Byfield. Yes, you think of him as skilled, but you also think of him as a big guy who will do other stuff for you and not just, but you really think of Raymond as the guy who gets on the ice, makes amazing plays, scores a lot of goals, like does all that stuff. And that's why I think you took a lot of stuff that I was going to say, but yeah.
Hill, who do you have for number 6?
Number 6 going to the Anaheim Ducks. I have defenseman Jamie Drysdale. So Jamie Drysdale, he put up 47 points in 49 games for the Erie Otters. He's a power play. He plays on the power play. He had 22 power play points. He's got very good skating. Also, another player near the top with great hockey sense. He's the kind of guy, he'll lead the play in. He'll go off the rush, and I can't talk either today. This is not good. Anyways, he's very good at transitioning. He's like a very good player in transition, and someone I would compare it to, even though it was only 1 year, I would compare him kind of similar to Cale Makar, in which they're both great skaters. They both have good hockey sense. They make really good passes, really good transition players, and they have very solid offensive games and playmaking abilities that makes them dangerous in their own, very dangerous in their own ways. And Jamie Drysdale, and he's very good power play quarterback. He's very good in the neutral zone, I think. And he's a shoot first kind of guy, which is good. So, you know, that's why. And also Anaheim kind of needs a defenseman, as they got some guys that are very old now.
Well, I had the Anaheim Ducks taking Marco Rossi at number 6. And I think that the Ducks, they have a solid defense. They already have a lot of players on defense, but a main problem with the Ducks last season is that a lot of the young players, such as Max Comtois, Max Jones, Sam Steele, those players, they're expected to do really well this season, but a lot of them really didn't live up to expectations, and I feel like that is a pretty big red flag for the Ducks, and it really shows that they should be drafting more forwards, because they do have Trevor Zegras and some other okay ones, but they really don't. But other than Trevor Zegras, they really don't have any standout prospects at forward. And that's why I think that they will try and get Marco Rossi. Trevor Zegras is a center, and they do already have some centers like Getzlaf and Henrique. But I find it likely that they will trade Adam Henrique And Zegras, he can play all forward positions, even though he's mainly listed as center. And I feel like because he can do it, they will be more than happy to move Zegras to the wing for a bit just to play with Rossi. But saying that, I do feel like Marco Rossi is a very likely suspect to crawl out of the top 10 because he's the type of player that normally falls out of the top 10. He's undersized. Even though he did play in the OHL this year, he comes from a non-traditional hockey nation as he's from Austria. And his play, he's also an overager, so a lot of people could say that the reason why he put up so much points this year was just because he was older than most other players, because he was only a few days too young to be able to be a part of the 2019 draft. So I feel like if I were the Ducks, I would take Marco Rossi, but he could still fall a lot in this draft.
All right. Well, who you got next?
Well, next I have the New Jersey Devils taking Jamie Drysdale. And I feel like I had Jamie Drysdale fall a lot in my ranking compared to how a lot of people said he would go. And this is a really good chance for the Devils to scoop him up. He's a really good player, and especially because P.K. Subban kind of flopped in New Jersey, they may be looking for another defenseman to fill that role. And they could use another defenseman. They could really use help at all positions. And I feel like at this point, because of that, they'll just take the best player available. And in my opinion, the best player available is Jamie Drysdale.
All right. Well, for me, I have the New Jersey Devils selecting right winger Alexander Holtz. Now Holtz is a guy that I think he could sneakily come out as the best one. Well, as one of the best, like top three players from this draft. He is a very, very skilled player, and he's been amazing in the Swedish Elite League. In 2018-19, he put up over a point per game. He had 47 points, including 30 goals in 38 games for the I don't know how to pronounce that. But
well, yeah, I think that last year that was in the Junior League, but that still is really good. And yeah, it can go on though.
Yeah, it was in the J20 Super Elite. It doesn't matter that it's in the Junior League. Well, kind of does, but he was amazing. And the year before, in the playoffs in 17-18, when he was a 16-year-old, I think. Yeah, when he was 16 years old, he put up just need to add these together. He put up 92 points in.
Take your time, Hirsty.
It's four different leagues. Four different leagues he played in.
This is why we're a hockey podcast and not a math podcast. You can see from this that there's a reason why we focus on sports and not school.
Well, I can add it up. It's 92 and 46 games. But the point is, he played in four different things, but he was a point per game in everything. And he had 12 points, including 11 goals in six playoff games as a 16-year-old in the J18. Damn it, these names are all impossible to pronounce.
Allsvenskan.
Allsvenskan. And yeah, so he's really good. So he's in the awards in 2017-18. He had in the Allsvenskan best plus minus, most goals, most points. In the J18 best, he was the best U18 forward. In the J18 elite, best plus minus, most assists, most points. Anyways, you get a lot of accolades. And he was he's got very good shot. He's probably his best tool. He's got an amazing shot. He's very good when it's even on the rush, kind of similar to Phil Kessel, where he came in with that snapshot from the wing and he's moving and he sniped it. But this is a wrist shot. He just comes in, zooms in, and he snipes it top shelf. Like, he's a very dangerous threat to score, as you can clearly see. And he's him and Gunler and Raymond are all the top three Swedes forwards from the first round. They're all very dangerous, and I think Holt could become the best out of could have a better career than Raymond. And in SHL points per 60 for time on ice, he was better than he had 0.4 points per 60 than Lucas Raymond, and he had 0.6 better points per thing than Noel Gundler. So he's been very good. He's a great skater. He's a third ranked international skater, and he's a very good skater, goal scorer, and he's a very dangerous player. And I think New Jersey can use a player like that on the wing to play with maybe Nico Hischier or Jack Hughes. And he's a right wing, and maybe they could have a line in the future with Hughes, Bratt and Holtz, or Hischier, Bratt and Holtz. Yeah.
All right. Well, who's your next pick?
Oh, my next pick, 8 overall, going to the Buffalo Sabres. I have Marco Rossi. Now, you had him earlier. You said he could slip, and the reason I have him probably a bit lower than these other guys is, one, Ottawa was they've been connected to Lucas Raymond, and there's been reports about that. And I think there's no way Jamie Drysdale slips lower than the top five, especially to a team like Ducks that need him. And, you know, Holtz, I think. And then, so Rossi going to the Sabres. Now, the Sabres definitely need someone that's going to be good quick, because they're like, I was thinking maybe they could pick Askarov because they need a goalie. But right now for them, it's about someone who can have an impact soon because their fan base hates them. But so Marco Rossi, he's an overager, 19 years old. He's very good. He put up 120 points in 56 games for the Ottawa 67s on a very stacked team. 2018-19, he put up 22 points in 17 playoff games. And he's a very talented player. And I think at the center position, he could help Buffalo a lot. And that could be like a 1-2 punch, him and Eichel. Or maybe Cousins, he could play with Cousins. Now, he's very good at he's very good with the puck. And someone similar I would compare him to is Claude Giroux, in the sense that I can't speak today. He's very good making room with the puck, and he's a very defensively responsible player. He's got very good positioning, and he's good at supporting below the hash marks in the defensive zone. And if you're going to get someone who's amazing like that two-way, a crap ton of points, as you saw, 120, a lot of points. He's very good defensively, and I think with the skill set, he could definitely go higher. But this is where I have him, going to Buffalo.
Okay, well, for my pick, for number 8, I have Buffalo taking Yaroslav Askarov. And to be fully honest, I actually toyed around with the idea of Ottawa taking Askarov at 5, but just like I just couldn't really see it in the end, so I decided to put him at 8. But Yaroslav Askarov, he's been compared to Carey Price, and you could say that he's the best goaltending prospect since then. And a lot of people are a bit hesitant to take goalies in the first round, but I really don't think that you should let a former stud slip just because of some bad past experiences. And Askarov, he's really good, and I feel like he's really been better than I expected to start this season. Because I know it's a small sample size, but in 3 games this year in the KHL at the start, he's a 0.74 goals against and a 974 save percentage, which is just amazing. It seems like his development is going even better than a lot of people thought. And I feel like a good development stance to put him in, and that teams will want to do is, so he'll spend this year playing in the KHL, hopefully get better, you know, like learn from experiences. He'll probably still play a few more games in the junior league just to get more seasoning. Then he'll play another year in the KHL, get even better, hopefully be one of the top goalies in the league that year. Then after that year, his contract in the KHL will expire, and he'll probably go to North America to play for the Rochester Americans, Buffalo's AHL team, play there, get better, you know, like learn from their goalie coaches and get used to the North American game, maybe even play a few NHL games near the end of the year. Then the next year, after 3 years of development, he should be good and ready to go to play in the NHL. And that's a really good timeline for a goalie if you're starting in the NHL at 21. Because for context, a lot of the younger goalies in the league nowadays were drafted in 2015 and 14 and are like 23 or 24 or 25. So I think that he's someone that can be really good. He's definitely a future stud for the Sabres. They have been looking for a new goalie, and he should answer that problem. And then at number nine, I have Minnesota taking Alexander Holtz. Kirsty, you already praised him a lot. You already said how good he is, and the main reason why I have Minnesota take him is because one of the main criticisms about Minnesota is that their game's really boring and doesn't really have any flavor to it. I think that Alexander Holtz can add that because he just is an electrifying goal scorer. He is one of the best shots out of all the players in this draft class, and he is probably more NHL ready. As if he does take some big steps, I could even see him playing in the NHL for a few games this season, which would be really rare for someone taking that late. But if he doesn't, he definitely should be ready to go after next year. And I think that he's just a really good player and he could find a good fit in Minnesota. They already have a lot of really good forwards. So I think that it's more likely that they already have a lot of really good D. So I think that's more likely that they'll take a forward. And maybe one day he can play with Kevin Fiala and get a lot of goals. So that's why I have them taking him.
All right. Well, at number nine for me, I actually have the first finish of the draft going to the Minnesota Wild. I have Anton Lundell. Now, with Lundell, something that's important to notice is that he plays a lot of minutes, unlike these other top prospects in the European leagues, like the German league, the Swedish league, the Finnish league. He only played under 10 minutes in one of his 67 games, and most first eligible draft players playing in European men's leagues, he's never had the uncertainty of being benched or sent down, which is very important. It shows his skill set, work, and his work ethic and his consistency. He is a very defensively responsible center who can still drop you a bunch of points. He's a big guy. He's got a very good wrist shot, and he's not the kind of guy that's going to be like a dick, like, you know, kind of like Jake Muzzin, but he's, well, that's a bad comparison, like Tom Wilson, but he's got the makings of a very good top center in the NHL. He's always in the play. He uses his size very well to take the puck away, to protect the puck. You know, he's got very good positioning with puck protection. He's very good with that, and he's a good skater. Like I said before, he's got an amazing wrist shot. He's got very good balance for a big guy, so he can go. He's someone that I really think could strive, especially because there's a lot now. The bigger guys are getting taken earlier because you just see a lot of guys, like the smaller guys, slip a lot, like Nick Robertson, making a lot of Leafs comparables. But yeah, this guy is a very good, strong center. He's strong built. He's big, and he's defensively responsible, like kind of like Rossi, and he's got a very deadly wrist shot. And I think he can start playing in the NHL maybe the year after he gets drafted, especially because Minnesota lacks at
top. Yeah. Well, like you mentioned too, he played in the Finnish Liga last year, which is a year before his draft year, which is really rare. And what's even more amazing, so he played 38 games and got 19 points, which means then most people, when they play in like a league like that, a year before they draft you, normally just like a few games. They don't really get much playing time just for seasoning. But it means that he got called up to play. He was good enough as a 16 or 17-year-old to stick there and continue playing there while also putting up good points and being defensively responsible. So I have him a bit later in my draft rankings, but now that I see you describe him and stuff, I feel like maybe I put him too low. But I'll just go over my rankings now. Yeah. Well, now who do you have at number 10, though, Hirsty?
Number 10, I have the very – this guy's been switched around a lot. There's been a very big range of where he's going. But since it's the Jets, I think there shouldn't be a question that Jake Sanderson gets drafted 10th overall. Now, Jake Sanderson, he's a very defensively responsible guy. He's a solid defenseman. And as you know, Winnipeg really needs defensemen, as they have Neil Pionk, the GOAT, Josh Morrissey, and
no one else.
Bucks, and Connor Hellebuck. I would say Connor Hellebuck's their third best defenseman. Well, first best defenseman, but he's also their third, fourth, fifth, and sixth best defenseman. So, you know, yeah, very strong. He's very good with the puck. He's got a very good transitional play, two-way. He's very good. He's got great skating. He was ranked top four in skating after Perfetti. Ahead of Perfetti and Rossi. And he was, and there's a lot of people. It's a quote from Mike Morale, of the NHL.com. I'd be shocked if Jake Sanderson is selected top 10 in the draft. He plays the game so efficiently, defends so hard, can jump into the play and add offense. He's the prototypical modern age defenseman. I know other defensemen get more notoriety because of the points they put up, but the beauty of Jake Sanderson is the more you watch them, the more you start to appreciate what an unbelievable defender he is. Now, you can't fully take his word because I'm sure you guys have seen NHL's redrafts on Instagram, and it's done by guys like him, and most of them suck, but this is a pretty good sum up of Jake Sanderson. He's, you know, he's going to throw the body around. He's a good penalty killer, very strong on the skates, on the puck, and he's a good defensive defenseman. And like you said, he gets less recognition because he doesn't drop a crap ton of points, but he's a very solid defensive defenseman, and I think he'll fit well with the Jets.
Well, at number 10, I also have the Jets taking Jake Sanderson. And really, when I first saw rankings with him, I always thought he was way too high. I was like, oh, like, maybe he was a bit, but I saw some rankings where they had him ahead of Drysdale, and he was, like, at number 5 or 6, and I was like, how could you be taking him so high? What's so special about him? He was supposed to go late first round to start this year. And then I was like, and then while I was doing research for this episode, I was watching some highlights from some of the players. When I was watching Jake Sanderson's highlights, the more and more I saw his highlights, the more and more I started to fall in love with him. I watched a whole bunch of one-on-ones with him, and he almost never gets beaten a one-on-one. I've never seen anyone ever go past him. He's really good with his stick and gap control, but he's not just good at one-on-ones. He's also just amazing in the defensive zone. He's really good at picking the pockets of players, taking off the puck, and he even playing against college players with the United States Development Program. They're doing exhibition games against, like, the Minnesota hockey team, the Michigan hockey team, the North Dakota hockey team, and all of them. He was just really good, and he could compete with players that were as old as 22 or 23, which is 4 or 5 years older than him, and he was still doing well. And also, he's also a really good skater, and even though he's good in the defensive zone, he can still easily join the rush and spark a rush. He's just a really good puck-moving defenseman while also being amazing in his own zone. And while I'm talking on him, there's one specific highlight that I would just like to mention. So he took the puck in the defensive zone. He skated around the other team's entire team. And keep in mind, this was against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. So that's a college team. So these players are a lot older than him. He skated around the line. He shot the puck. The goalie saved it. And then the other team was going around the other way, and it looked like he was way out of the rush. And a lot of people would say, like, oh, that's such a bad play. He's way out of the rush. What is he doing? He's in such bad position. Then he just all of a sudden comes out of nowhere, uses his amazing speed, and lifts the puck carrier stick, takes it away, and turns it back the other direction. And I know I probably didn't do that clip justice, and if this was a video podcast, I definitely pull that clip up right now. But that's just a prime example of how good Jake Sanderson is. And really, I feel like this is a steal at number 10. Jake Sanderson is going to be really good in the NHL. All and right. It's not just because we share the same first name.
Mm-hmm. Well, who's your next pick?
Well, at number 11, I have Nashville taking Jack Quinn. And the reason why I have them taking Jack Quinn is because I feel like the main problem with Nashville is that the main issue that they've been trying to address is they've been trying to find someone to be a goal scorer on their team. Because Philip Forsberg recently, I really don't think he's been able to fit that profile of what he's supposed to be, because lately he's really turned into more of a 65-point scorer, which, don't be wrong, which isn't that bad, but they really need someone better. And that's why with recent years, we've seen them add a lot of players like Kyle Turris, Matt Duchene, Victor Arvidsson. We've seen them at Ryan Johansson. We've seen them add all those players because they're trying to get someone to be their main goal scorer. And I feel like Jack Quinn, he can really provide that. He's one of the best goal scorers in this draft. He was one of the top players in goal scoring in this draft, besides only Toronto's own Nick Robertson. And even though Jack Quinn was playing with Marco Rossi, I still feel like he can still put up goals by himself just with his amazing shot and his offensive instincts, because he just has the killer instinct that all great goal scorers have. Just put the puck in the net. He'll do everything to try and do that. So that's why I think that he'll fit really well in Nashville, and he can fill a bit of a void on the wing. So that's why I have them taking him.
Yeah, well, I also have Nashville taking Jack Quinn, and the same thing about the center, the goal scoring. But something notable is that he wasn't even in Larry Fisher's top 124 preseason rankings released last August, and in November was still projected as a third rounder. And he came all the way up. He just shot up. He had
he was one of the biggest risers in the draft because he just was amazing with his goal scoring and stuff. And that's one of the other reasons why I have so high, like I was talking about with Tim Stützle, is that he progressed so much this year. That's really something that you like to see from a player that you are drafting, is that they're progressing a lot, because that means that they'll continue to do so.
Yeah, and like you said before, someone I want to compare him to is Nick Robertson. They're both pretty small. I mean, Jack Quinn is 2 inches taller than Robertson, and he weighs 30 more pounds, but they're born 8 days apart, and they both put up a lot of points this season. They're big goal scorers. Nick Robertson, 55 points, 55 goals. Quinn, 52. Obviously, Robertson had basically the same amount of points, but in 16 less games. But because Quinn didn't play in the World Juniors, but he's a very good player. Like, Jack Quinn, he's got great offensive talent, and he's an incredible goal scorer. He's got great work ethic on and off the ice, and that's what probably was a big part of him increasing his rankings, was his work ethic. On and off the ice, he's got some of the greatest work ethic of the prospects available. Like, he's very good, and he had a nearly a goal per game this season, 52 goals in 62 games. He can clearly shoot the puck, and he's a very dangerous offensive player. Now, he's also got good hands, very high hockey IQ, not just in the offensive zone, but in the defensive zone. And he used to have bad skating, which he turned it into a strength of his, which is very good. And it's probably another reason why his draft stock shot up so much. He had 89 points in 62 games this year, and he was very good on a stacked Ottawa 67s team. But I think this guy is going to be good, and especially for Nashville, who needs a goal scorer, and with their guys that they already have not really showing up to it, that's who I think it is. Now, at number 11.
Well, I just want to bring something up before you start again, is that I just want to talk about Jake Sanderson. I just want to say another point that I forgot to bring up with Sanderson, is that he was playing for the United States Development Program, which means that program is more focused on development than winning it. Like, it's still focused on winning. It's also focused on developing the players and making sure that everyone gets fair ice time stuff. So that's another reason why Jake Sanderson didn't put up as much numbers, is because he really only played around 18 minutes a game. Well, a lot of the other players that played in, like, the OHL and stuff, a lot, the defensemen, like, for example, Jamie Drysdale, although they don't keep track of ice time in the CHL, he most likely played around 25 or 26 minutes a game, which is a really big difference. That's also why a lot of the times in the development program, players, even though it's not, it may not be as high of competition, it's rare. They don't really want to have someone playing only like 7 minutes a night, which is really the most that a player will be playing is around 18 minutes a night. So that's another thing that you should keep in mind whenever you're discussing someone from the development program.
Yeah. Well, on my next one, now, this is one I kind of struggled with because I was kind of torn between two players. First of all, just want to make people know, they probably already know this, but they got a lot of players that are retiring this year. Well, not retired. What am I saying? I'm stupid. They're not retiring, but they have like four free agents. Hoffman's a free agent. Trocheck's gone.
Dadanov's a free agent.
Dadanov's a free agent. That's like three of their top forwards. And now that's probably why I was gonna pick a forward, but I think they could be able to re-sign. And I think that's one of the reasons that I went with them drafting Caden Gooley. Now, it's definitely one of their biggest problems is goaltending, with Bobrovsky playing like dog shit this year. But they do have Spencer Knight in the system. So why would they take Askarov unless they just want to stack up on goalies, which maybe they're doing. They're just – they love goalies. But I think they could definitely pick Caden Gooley. Now, Caden Gooley, he is a very good skater, good speed, great acceleration. And he's able to push the – he pushes the play, leads the play in the offensive zone, and he's able to get back quickly into defensive zone and getting into position. He's got a good offensive game. He's a solid stick handler. He's good at maneuvering himself around the ice, good passing skills. But he's also, I think, probably the bread and butter of his game is definitely his defensive game. He's got very good skating, which helps him with his gap control. It's very hard to beat him in the one-on-one situations. And he can throw a big hit, but is disciplined and doesn't take a lot of penalties. He's a very good position player in the defensive zone. And with his long stick, because he's pretty big, he's a tall guy, he can he's 6'3", he can, with his tall height and long stick, he's able to knock pucks out of the lane and block the lanes and stuff. So that's why I think he's a very solid, and Florida needs defensemen, so especially because they have Aaron Ekblad. They no longer have the worst contract in the NHL, probably Mike Matheson, but they still need defensemen.
They still have the worst contract in the NHL. Sergei Bobrovsky. Oh,
yeah. They still have the worst contract in the NHL. Sergei Bobrovsky. Yeah, well, he has a very potential to be a top pairing defenseman and play big minutes. And if he can reach his potential, he'll be a very elite shutdown defender. And I could see his game is similar to the likes of Colton Parayko. But it's more of a stylistic comparison, and not just based on skill. And like actual ability. So that's why I have Gooley at 12 and Florida needs defense.
Okay. Well, next for my next pick I have Florida taking Anton Lundell. And I was saying earlier how I think that I missed out on one with him and not putting him earlier. But I still put him going to Florida because he's just really good defensively. He's one of the best defensive forwards in this draft class. And he is also more ready because he has played against men for a few years, which means that he'll be ready to play in the NHL pretty soon. And he's just amazing defensively. He has a really good defensive game and stuff, and while also being a pretty good skater and having a lightning quick wrist shot. And I feel like he's just someone that would really fit in Florida because they are in need of some defense. And also because I find it very unlikely that they re-sign Eric Haller this year because he didn't really fit well in Florida. He just never really got off to a good start. So I find unlikely that they re-sign him. And that means that they'll be needing someone to be the number two center behind Barkov. I feel like Anton Lundell can fit that position because I don't feel like he can be a number one center, but he can be like a really good number two center. So that's why I have Florida taking him. And then next at number 13, this is Carolina's pick. And to be completely honest, I feel like Carolina will try and trade this pick to get better goaltending. I find it very unlikely that they actually take someone with this pick and then we'll probably just try and trade it. But if they do try and pick someone with it, they have a really good all-around team. And I can't really find, like, one area that they'll probably want to improve on, which is why they'll probably just want to pick the best player available. And right now, I think that's Seth Jarvis. Seth Jarvis is out of the WHL. He played for the Portland Winterhawks, and he's really good. He's kind of like a Braden Point type player. He's a bit shorter, but he's just really good. He can score a lot of goals. He had 42 goals this year in the WHL, but he also got a lot of assists. He came close to 100 points, and he's just really good. And he's another player that his rankings have really surged this year, and I just really like him.
All right. Well, I kind of agree with you, but at number 13, I think Florida probably will trade the pick, honestly, to get a goalie, possibly to the Leafs for Frederik Andersen. I think the Leafs, that would be awesome if the Leafs did that and then flipped one of their picks for a player. But because they've said before they won't trade away any of their picks for like a player. But yeah, so I have them taking, it's either they're going to trade it, and I think if they don't, they're probably going to take Yaroslav Askarov. Now, here's the thing with taking goalies really early. It's either an Al Montoya or a Carey Price. There's not really an in-between. Now, so they're either going to be amazing.
I'd say that there is. What about Jack Campbell?
Shut up. That's not the point. Anyways, so they're either amazing or dog shit, and there's not really an in-between. Aside from, I guess, Jack Campbell, yeah. But, you know, there's not much other of an in-between. So I think Askarov is a very good goalie prospect, and I hope the Leafs get him, as I've said before on the podcast. But I think Carolina is going to take him. Nedeljkovic has not looked very good when he came up into the NHL. He has had a lot of bad starts. And last year with KHL, SKA St. Petersburg, in 18 games, he put up a 2.45 goals against and a 920 save percentage. And the year before, in 31 games, 2.37 goals against, 921 save percentage. Both years is amazing. This year in 3 games with SKA St. Petersburg, KHL, he put up 7.4 goals against, 974 save percentage. And yeah, it's 3 games, but he was supposed to be the top 10 pick. He was said to be a generational talent, and I think he does have the potential to be that. He could be a generational talent, and especially if he's developed properly. Now, he's basically a lock to be drafted in the top 15, because I think if Buffalo passes and Carolina passes, I think the Leafs will probably take him. But so he didn't do very – did he play in the World Juniors?
He did play in the World Juniors. He was okay in them, but yeah. It's kind of to be expected because it's kind of hard for a 17-year-old goalie to succeed in the World Juniors. So kind of like with Quinton Byfield, I really don't think you should read much into him not doing too well at the World Juniors, and it's not really something that you should judge him off of. And he'll play in the World Juniors again this year unless he's injured, and he'll probably do really well. He'll be expected to be Russia's number one goalie. So, And then now, Hirsty, who do you think Edmonton will take with number 4?
I'm not finished.
But you've been going on for like 2 hours. I already...
30 seconds, but I think his best part of his game is his quickness, and he's got very good reflexes and his positioning and his crease. Anyways, next, I think the Oilers, if OEL wasn't such a jerk face and wanted to go to the Oilers too, I think this pick would be gone already, and I think it still might be traded in a Darcy Kemper type deal as Arizona has said they want a young defenseman, which, believe it or not, Oilers have a big surplus of young defensive prospects. So, wait, what was I saying?
You're talking about... So
if they don't trade this pick, I think the Edmonton Oilers are going to pick Seth Jarvis. Now, it was between him and Dawson Mercer, and I do think Seth Jarvis will edges out Mercer just because he's a bit better. You said a lot before. He's a very good player, right? You know?
Yeah.
He's got very good ability to work in small areas. He's got a very good attacker. He's very good at protecting the puck in scenarios. And he moved up a lot on the draft rankings. In the second half, he moved up from, like, especially, I'm not sure how he was originally ranked, but he did very good in the second half of the season. He posted up 63 points in the second half of the season for a total of 98 points in 58 games with the Portland Winterhawks. And he is a right wing center, and Oilers do need wingers to play alongside McDavid and worst Hart Trophy winner of all time, Leon Draisaitl. Not worst, but like least deserving. And there's a lot of people in the first round that we said that have very good hockey sense, but he's another one of those guys that has it. He's got very good skills to go after a defenseman with the puck and get around him, and he knows how to do it properly. He's got a very good skating ability. Not the fastest, but he does everything else very well with this skating. He's very good on his – strong on his skates. He's got good like change direction, you know, agility. But he's his best – well, not his best, but what separates him from other players is that he's got the ability to just take over a game. He can just turn – he just turns on, and then he just become – he's just amazing, and he makes amazing plays. He's a power forward, but he still is a very good playmaker and drives to the net, makes those plays, you know? And I think he's got a lot of skill, and I think that's why he's going to go to the Edmonton Oilers if they need him, because they could use a power forward alongside Connor McDavid to go in, body check them out of the way, take the puck, pass in front of the net. Look, there's Connor McDavid, one-on-one on the goalie. That's definitely a goal no matter what.
Okay, well, in mind this, so I don't think that the Oilers will trade their first round pick, because I think that the main problem with the Oilers in the past few years is their bad drafting and their failure to develop prospects properly. And that's why I think that one of the Oilers' main concerns right now should be to replenish the cupboard. So that's why I think that they'll hang on to this pick. And as to who they're picking, I think my take may be a bit controversial, but I think we'll be picking Jacob Perreault. And I think that this may be a bit controversial He's going a lot higher than a lot of people think he will. Like, for example, in the Hockey News draft preview issue, they ranked him 39th, and it's a really big jump. But I think the reason why I have him so high is because he's a really good shooter. He has one of the top shots in this draft class. And I think that's really important because he is a right winger. So they'll want to draft him to play beside McDavid. And if you play someone who has just an above average shot with McDavid for the entire season, they'll be getting at least 30 goals. So that's why I think that he'll really fit well with McDavid, because literally all he has to do is just stand in the circle, wait for McDavid to pass it to him, and he'll have a 40 goal year. And I think that he can develop well. He's also just a really complete prospect too. He also is a pretty good skater, so he can still keep up with McDavid when it comes to skating and up the rush. So I feel like he'll just fit really well with McDavid.
All right.
And then also,
who's your next guy?
Well, I think that my next guy, this pick, I actually took a lot of time to go over because this is number 15. So this is the Leafs pick. And even though the Leafs will probably trade this pick, there is a chance that they will keep it because Kyle Dubas, he does like drafting. He does like hanging on to his picks. there is a, still a pretty good chance that they do keep it. And I think that with this pick, that I finally settled on Caden Gooley. Now, for this one, I went over a bit of other players. I went with Brandon Schneider for a bit, William Wallander, Helgi Grand. So there's a few different players that I considered the putting in this position. But in the end, I decided to go with Caden Gooley just because Caden Gooley is just really good on all ends of the ice. He's amazing defensively. And when I was watching highlights from it, the first thing that I saw was this guy is a Jake Muzzin clone. Caden Gooley, he's basically Jake Muzzin, a younger version of Jake Muzzin. He puts up big hits. He's a pretty good skater. He can still contribute pretty well offensively. He's just Jake Muzzin light. Well, not light because he's good. I
disagree with you on that one, but I'll talk more about that after.
And also, even though Caden Gooley, he is a left defenseman, which some people may be a bit alarmed by, I feel like the Leafs, they shouldn't really have a problem with playing him on the right side. And Caden Gooley, he's just really good. He put up a lot of points while his main strength still being good, being good defensively, which I think is just like amazing. You know, it's just really good. And people may point to his big point increase from last year to this year, be wondering what happened. Well, the main reason is because last year the team that he was on is really good, so he didn't really get much playing time. But this year when he finally did get a lot of playing time, he really exploded in terms of points. But the only thing that you should be concerned about with him going to the Leafs is that the team that he played for, the Prince Albert Raiders, they play really defensively. They let up one of the lowest shots on goal per game and goals per game in the entire CHL. And they play a system that's more similar to the Stars or the Islanders. So I think that can be a bit of a concern with the Leafs because they pretty much play the exact opposite of that. And I feel like that actually could be a good thing because he put up 40 points while being on a defensive team. So imagine how much points he could have put up if he played for like the Peterborough Preets or the Ottawa 67s. So I feel like he is Caden Gooley. He's just the entire package. He can hit. He can score. He has a really good shot. He has a good skating, so that's why I think that the Leafs should take him at number 15 if he is available.
All right, well, at number 15, first of all, I think the Leafs will, there could be a possibility that Montreal trades one pick up for the Leafs pick just so they can get Dawson Mercer or a forward that's left available, because I think if they might be worried that the Leafs would take one of those forwards and then they would be in trouble because they need someone who can go for. Anyways, and I think either way, they're going to pick a right defenseman. And this guy, I think, is more like Jake Muzzin, Braden Schneider. Now, you screwed the pooch on his name before. You called him Brandon. So I would like you to apologize for that.
Sorry.
He's on the Leafs, if he goes on the Leafs. But with the Brandon Wheat Kings last year, he's an assistant captain. He put up 42 points in 60 games. And he is a very, like Jake Muzzin, like I said, he's a big boy and he'll rock your shit. So he's very strong and he'll hit you and he'll, like Jake Muzzin, he'll come in and he'll body you. He in the defensive zone, which is probably his best features, he's very solid. He's a machine. He tracks and can anticipate the cycles. He's very good with reading, like good hockey IQ. He's very good at tying up, boxing out people in front of the net, as you could surmise from the fact that he's very big and strong. And he can do it without taking penalties, which is good for a defenseman to possess because, you know, there's a lot of guys who are good at knocking people out of the net way, but some of them do it by just cross-checking you in the head, and that's penalties. And that's, you know, he's very good shutdown defender. I think the thing that makes him the most special is his consistency and efficiency. Not only is he very good, but he's always, every time the defensive zone, he's going to get it done. You know, he's probably going to be able to get the puck out or body the guy out of the way so that they can get it. And he's not – he's good, great defensively, but he's not bad on offense. He still gets a good amount of points on a Brandon Wheat Kings team that's not the best. They're not amazing, but they're not bad. But it's he's not playing with another top prospect. The other defenseman he's playing with, the other defenseman on his team, they combined for They combined for a total of it's loading.
Well, it's fine. I think that we get the point that he didn't really play
okay,
with.
Okay, it's here. The other the four of the other defensemen on his team combined for a total of 84 points. That's four other defensemen on his team. Like, he's not playing with amazing top prospects, and he's still getting 40 points, even with all that amazing defensive play. And I think he's a good, he's a right shot defenseman, which can help for the Leafs. And I think Gouley will already be gone at this point. And I think if Askarov's available, it's a toss-up between him or Askarov. But I think based on our other mock draft, I think he should, they should definitely pick Braden Schneider.
Yeah, well, that's a good opinion. I've seen a lot of people saying that the Leafs should take Schneider. So I feel like that isn't really too bad of a decision. It's not really, there's not really a wrong answer here. Well, there is, but compared with the options, there's not really a wrong answer, and I can't fault you for saying that. And I did have Schneider there. I really wouldn't be mad if the Leafs take it. Yeah, so everybody, that is our top 15. We've already been going for a while, so I think that we did have another segment planned, but I think that we should just end it here because we don't want to bore all of you guys. I'm sure that you don't want to listen to us talking for 2.5 hours, so I think that's just better if we end it here, right, Hersey?
Sure.
All right, so everybody, we hope that you liked this episode. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Broken Twig Podcast, and on Twitter, it's at The Broken Twig. Post a lot of great stuff on that. Remember to rate us on all options, and we hope that you're having a great day, and we hope that your team doesn't pick a bust in the upcoming draft, and goodbye.